Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's world of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are here on this Tuesday episode to talk about slaves who are not drugged. That's what we're talking about.
Don't do drugs, kids.
Don't do drugs, and especially don't take them if they're given to you. If they're forced upon you, I guess it's a different story. You don't really have an option at that point.
Yeah, especially if it's like a probably very dirty needle being, you know, shoved into your neck or whatever.
A dirty, thick needle.
Yeah.
A boba straw of a needle.
Side note, have you ever seen the needles used for rabies vaccines in humans?
No. Like, fortunately, no.
All right, so they're really fucking thick needles like this one, and they go right into your fucking gut. So have fun thinking about that while we're talking about this episode.
Don't love it.
Yeah, there's like a series of like four or five that you have to get to.
Mm.
It's not just like one and done.
Gross.
Yeah, nope. Don't get bit by like random animals.
That just reminds me of a older, is it Palino? Chuck Palino, the guy who wrote Fight Club?
I don't know.
He has this book called Rant. It was really good. And the guy's, the main character, his whole thing is like he gets high off of rabies.
Okay.
And like he purposely contracts rabies.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, he's like, he's got some genetic like deal with him where he doesn't kill him. It just makes him like euphoric. So he's like trying to contract as much rabies as possible. There's a lot more to the story. This is just a small through line to it, but
finding random raccoons out in the wild.
Yes. Oh. I'm not even joking.
Holy
yes.
Holy shit.
And he's like patient zero for a rabies epidemic or some kind of shit. Weird book. I remember it being good. It may not have held up over time, but I remember enjoying it when I read it in high school.
Sounds fucking weird.
Well, it's all of his books are fucking weird.
Yeah, that's true. Anyways.
So we are here talking about minutes 76 through 77. Happy halfway point.
Yeah.
To our season two, I guess.
Yeah, we have, I think, you know, I think we're at 154 episodes. It's either 154 or 158. I have to go back and
okay.
Look, but well,
we're nearing it.
If we're nearing,
not, yeah.
This week at one point will be the halfway point.
Oh, so. We did it. We are over the hill at some point this week. So we left off yesterday with Lady Fenring removing her opera glasses. And she looks like she's about to say something. And what she actually says is that slave isn't drugged.
And then another Bene Gesserit sister who remains veiled.
Yep.
Pulls her opera glasses up, and you can almost kind of see the face of this person through the veil, at least the outline of it. You can't see any of the details, which I think is cool that like,
sure.
You know, the Bene Gesserit goes so far as to like keep themselves hidden, but they're kind of not under this, you know, black sun of Gedi Prime.
You're right. I feel like they would have chosen fabrics and materials that would still have maintained their privacy, which is what they've done.
Yeah.
I just found it to be incredibly funny that we don't get this shot for very long.
No.
She starts to raise her, the spectacles up to her face. And I was like, you got a fucking piece of cloth there. How are you going to see through? I was like, that looks, I don't know, just something about the way they edited it. Something about the way they edited it makes me think that like they also caught on to that. Like, oh shit, we shouldn't share that. Like, that's kind of dumb.
I don't know. It's funny.
It is a little bit funny. It's an unintentional laugh line for me, but we don't stay on it for very long.
No, because we cut to a different kind of spectacle.
Yes.
Except this one's more of a monocle.
Mm-hmm.
Vladimir's attendant is looking through like the most like clunky monocle ever.
Yeah.
What's the word? The fucking periscope. No, not
telescope.
Telescope.
Yeah.
That one.
A seeing glass.
Yar! Yeah, Vladimir's attendant's looking through his telescope, and he is freaking out. He's like, that bug is walking straight. And yeah, he's got like a look of fear almost.
Oh,
and
yeah. I mean, he looks over at Vladimir with horror.
The attendant says, we should cancel the fight. And Vladimir takes a big puff and says, don't spoil my nephew's birthday.
Oh, man. So I was trying to draw analogies to this attendant, like, to the books. And the closest thing that I could think, and I don't think it actually is this character. There's a character in the book called Nefud.
Yep.
And he's like the...
Nefud's also in the 84 Lynch film.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yes. And he's like the head of the Vladimir's like personal guard kind of stuff. Because we get so little interaction with this guy, I don't think it's him, but it would make sense that Nefud would be present here.
Yeah.
In this moment. And with especially
Vladimir in his box and everything.
Yeah. And be concerned about the safety. So there's a very small connection that you can draw. I think you can draw anyways, that points to this character being called Nefud.
Headcanon, this is Nefud.
Yeah.
Don't at me.
But the, another fun thing about Nefud is that he was just a soldier, and on the assassination attempt, that for the tooth scene. Mm-hmm. He was just one of the soldiers that was around, and the previous head of Vladimir's guard got killed in that attack. And he, Nefud didn't, and he just got, you know, field promoted basically to the head of the attack. But he has a Samuda addiction.
Hell yeah.
And one of the first things that he thinks after he gets his promotion, he's like, fuck yeah, this means more money. I am never going in without my drugs ever again. So, yeah, I don't know. I would love for that to be true, but we don't get any kind of confirmation because I don't think this person is named in the movie, even in the credits. I haven't checked.
But I didn't go digging through the credits, but I would be shocked if he's actually named as Nefud in the credits.
Right, yeah.
So we leave Vladimir's box at this point, and we are back down ground level in the arena. And the camera is kind of like in the middle of these four men walking towards each other slash hobbling.
Right.
We get a shot of, you know, each of the Atreides fighters, you know, walking and hobbling through the arena. And then we cut to Fade. And I believe we are at your Beavs that you mentioned yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Because I also have Beavs here. I want to provide some background.
Okay.
All of this sequence that was shot for this scene between Fade and the fighters was done in a lot, basically in a parking lot that was like filled with sand and everything. And it was in Budapest between two of the sound stages that the team was using for other scenes and everything.
Sure.
Art and Soul shows that behind them, there were essentially just like tan boxes that were used to help, you know, have some contrast for the green screen and everything.
Mm-hmm.
To then, you know, have the walls of the arena and then above it, the arena itself.
Okay.
And they did all the shooting outside in the sun. It was actually specifically Art and Soul calls out that it was done like during a gross heat wave.
Oof.
Which I think adds a little more to the, you know, to the tension, because as you and I both know, being Southerners here in the U.S., being outside in the heat is miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it just adds more to the intensity of the fight. But for all the praise that we have given the combination of outside shots and CG, this is the one shot, I think, that stands out as the most like egregious...
Mm-hmm.
Misbalance of character actors against a CG background, where like Fade is too well lit and the background is too opaque and weird.
Yep.
And he stands out too much.
That is exactly what I had written down.
Okay, cool.
Yes, it is clearly a green screen shot here.
Yeah.
And the lighting is not, it's not consistent.
Yeah.
It's like there was a spotlight on Fade and then the background is like blurry, out of contrast, weird looking.
And that's the only one out of these shots that is like that. Yeah. So
because you don't see it in the wide shots.
No, and it makes me wonder, like, was that one shot, because that's the shot where Faye just goes wah, or whatever.
Not yet. It's not.
Oh no, that's not yet. That's my bad. But yeah, it makes me wonder if it was one that they were like, ah, shit, like we need to actually like go get this shot, and then it was done like out of sequence later on.
Could have been, yeah.
You know, filled in kind of extra shot kind of stuff.
Yeah. Fortunately for moviegoers, this shot lasts about 2 seconds.
If that.
Yeah, so it is very, very quick, but we just happened to notice it on our frame-by-frame watch through.
Yep.
So Fade basically just like picks one of the people that who's walking towards him and starts making a beeline directly towards that person. And it happens to be the first person that we saw exit the doors.
Yep.
So the big beefy guy, big beefy Atreides.
Well, there's two big beefy Atreides, Ben, and then there's skinny little Lanville.
Right. As he's walking towards him, the guy's face like contorts in this fury almost. Like, you know, his adrenaline is starting to go, and he makes the first move and, you know, gives out this like, yell, battle cry, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's a big like downward swipe that Fade just sidesteps like it's nothing.
Yeah, and for opening moves, this is not a good one. Mm-mm. I mean, call it the drugs, call it whatever, but you know, this is not a good opening move because this is a very exaggerated, very just slow overhead attack, like you said. And Fade wastes zero energy, or even expends zero energy, just sidestepping this thing.
Yeah, he sidesteps and then just immediately elbows him super fucking hard in the gut.
Yeah.
Which Foley was beautiful.
Oh, sure.
Love that.
Punching that leather sack.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough to where the guy stumbles back and then falls to his knee, or falls to one knee.
Yeah.
When he gets back up, he makes like a thrusting attack, like just a straightforward thrust. Unclear if he realizes that Fade has a shield on. Given the speed of the blade, I would assume he does not realize this.
Yep, because we see the shield kind of like pop up for a moment.
Yep, yeah. Fade dodges this one like it's nothing, and he gives the guy like a slice on the abdomen, like just kind of a rotating cut.
Well, he gives him the old one too, a slice in the belly and a slice in the throat.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as he like recomposes himself for half a second after this abdomen slice, he does the same motion that we saw him take out one of the raincoats earlier. Mm-hmm. Just a full arm extended slice catches him in the throat, and the guy just falls.
I wonder if our hooded gimp fixed the balance issue.
It would seem so.
Yeah,
because he's using them very well here.
He was using them very well before too.
True. Yeah. Also true. So another Atreides guy is walking towards Fade, and he makes another attempt to like stab and punch. I mean, they're going to be alternating knife blows and like closed hand blows throughout this. Does Fade still have both of his knives drawn at this point?
Yeah, he still has both of his blades.
Okay.
And he will have both of his blades until
a couple of minutes from now.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get there.
Yeah.
Now this guy is a little bit better. Now he actually manages to get a like a solid shield hit on Fade before Fade just fucking drops him in some close quarter combat.
The difference though is that Fade, so when we were first introduced to the shields in Dune Part 1, Paul takes a hit from Gurney and gets fucking sent to his knees because the impact force still exists and will still drive, you know, someone to their knees if they get hit hard enough. Mm-hmm. Fade is a wall here.
Yeah.
He does, like, he gets hit and just does not react at all.
I'm getting ahead of myself, but we don't see him have any of those, like, major hits to the shield with Lanville. But I wonder if that's just because these soldiers are drugged and they're not at full strength.
Or
Fade's just a fucking...
Fade's just a monster.
Yeah, could be.
And Gurney's probably also just a monster too, because the impact sound from that one in part one was also just like,
ka-doosh. And at the time, little Timmy Chalamet is just a little, you know, twig of a person. So yeah, he was probably easy to get knocked down at that point. So after this guy gets a, there's a couple, like a second or two of close quarter combat. And he, the Atreides guy also gets a slash to the neck and he falls.
Yeah. He crumples.
Yeah. And we don't, and I checked for this. We don't actually see the wound. This is one of those choreographed things where we don't see it, but we hear it and the guy falls. So we're just left to assume he just got his neck sliced open.
Movie's PG-13.
Fair enough. Yeah. Then Fade turns his sights to Lanville.
And this is the...
Bleh. Yeah. John's yeah. like, what the fuck is this, dude? yeah, he just gives his like sound or whatever it is. It's so weird.
And we see Fade's black teeth.
Yes. Did we not see those last week?
So the Harpies had black teeth last week.
That's right. That's right.
But we never saw Fade's teeth last week.
Just pitch black mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So disconcerting.
It's so... And I'll talk about it more in tomorrow's episode because mm-hmm. like there's one particular shot that just like makes Fade look so fucking weird.
And as I was watching these minutes, I was wondering, are they doing any kind of CG work to Austin Butler's face? I know there's prosthetics on it,
mm-hmm.
But there are times where he like opens his mouth and it looks like he's opening his mouth wider and like bigger than a mouth should.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Do
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but you got to remember too, if your teeth are all blacked out, it will make your mouth appear
that's
larger.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Especially in this situation where it's like black white, there's no like shades of skin tones or anything like that.
Fair.
And you can't see his gums, so it just looks much more weird and off-putting.
Yeah.
And also the fact that
it was like an uncanny valley kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it also doesn't help that Fade has like a super like overly pronounced brow and like perfectly bald head and everything. It does make his proportions look weird and more Neanderthalic,
sure,
because of that. And like the whole uncanny valley thing is, my understanding is that part of that is because of the relationships between Homo sapiens and Neanderthals, where there was like some weird evolutionary, like weird shit going on where it's like, you're not entirely human, I need to kill you.
Fair. Okay. I've heard that before and I would tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
Also aliens, maybe. Who knows?
Aliens.
This is where we start to really see the difference between Lanville and these two other guys. Lanville looks, I won't say calm, but cool and collected.
Yeah.
And as Fade makes the first move against Lanville in this instance. He just got done killing two folks. He's got his adrenaline pumping. He's kind of in a flow. So he makes the first attack and Lanville dodges him easy.
Mm-hmm.
He is just, you know,
he's defending himself.
Yeah, defending himself. He's walking backwards. He's kind of on the defense. And we get to see this in a wide shot. And they're exchanging really quick back and forth, hand and blade blows, all like just a mix of the two.
Yep.
Which is impressive. I mean, hella impressive to know which, you know, am I going to block this blade with my wrist on accident, mm-hmm. kind of thing? Like that takes a lot of training.
Well, in fairness, Lanville had some of the best sword masters to train him. So
I was that was a little bit later in this minute. You know, we get to see that because we haven't really been introduced to Lanville's fighting. We get to see him as a person and as a, you know, commanding officer and you know, briefly as a prisoner in the cell.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't seen his fighting really, and it would make perfect sense for us to assume that he trained extensively with Duncan Idaho, or at the very least Gurney Halleck, who was a very capable swordsman in himself.
Mm-hmm. One of the best, even.
Yeah. So there's one shot where I loved it here. So Fade kind of does like a Anakin killing Darth Sidious motion.
Yeah.
With his blades. Like he crosses them and tries to get one blade on either side of Lanville's neck.
Yeah.
And Lanville just like neos himself out of it.
He knows Kung Fu.
Yeah. Quite literally. Yes, he does. So And it's at that point where I think Fade realizes that this is not a normal fight.
Yeah. And he looks upward to see his uncle. I don't know how well he can see his uncle. Given as large as his uncle is, you might be able to see him a little easier. But he definitely, you know, we see his uncle leaning forward in and looking very intently at this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we end the minute with, "Happy birthday, dear."
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
So the beginning of the fight in this book is a lot of pomp and circumstance.
Sure.
The book gives us a little bit of additional context that this, his 17th birthday, Fade Rautha kills his 100th slave gladiator. So one of these folks that we get to see here is going to be his 100th.
Lucky number 100.
Right. Now, in the books, there's only one one slave that we meet in the fight.
Yeah.
We're not introduced to two that crumble easily and then one that's not. So we've talked about Lanvil being kind of a composite character for a few different folks.
Yeah, he's an amalgamation of a bunch of Atreides and like what the Atreides stand for and everything.
Right. So, or the closest analogy is this one unnamed Harkonnen soldier that Fade fights in the arena here.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also wearing a shield in the books, just like normal. But something fun to note is that the slave fighter, the Atreides slave, is also wearing a shield
in
the books, but only half of one. So half of his body is shielded and half of it's not. So he describes the book describes the Atreides soldier is walking out. He's got his green what's the Scottish
kilt?
A kilt. Thank you. Sorry, I don't know why I couldn't remember that word. He's got his green kilt and he's wearing a red belt that has an arrow on it that points to the side that he's that he's shielded on, so Fade would know. we get a lot of mention and talk about the blades that Fade is using.
Mm-hmm.
The white one stands for poison and the black one stands for purity. But again, this is not a storyline that is present in the movies. And yeah, there's just like a bunch of dedications. He dedicates the fight to his uncle and patron, the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. To which his uncle sighed at that because he thinks it's a little bit too pomp and circumstance. But Fade was delighted to see his uncle sigh. Now, something, I feel okay saying this because both of these storylines are left out of the movie.
Okay.
There is a secret word that this Atreides soldier has been mentally conditioned to react to. And that word is scum.
Yeah, it's a sleeper agent word.
Yes, yeah. Quite later. And when I say, I think sleeper agent is super apt for this because when Fade will say that word, basically the Atreides soldier becomes paralyzed for about a second.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. And, you know, that just gives him an opening if he needs it to, you know, make a killing blow.
This is a super balanced fight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Completely fair within regulation.
Yep. Just like the books, this soldier is not drugged, so we actually get a fair amount of conversation between Fade and this soldier. The soldier knows about the whole white is poison, black is not kind of thing.
Yep.
But as a trick, Fade had those blades switched, so his black one is poison and his white one is not.
Ooh, sneaky.
Sneaky, sneaky, yeah, yeah. So both the book and the movie, the people around the Baron realize very quickly that this slave is not drugged. And Fade realizes it pretty quickly too. As just walking out.
Yeah.
And I think that is all I will say
for now.
We got a little bit more in this fight, a lot more in this fight actually. So I will sprinkle in what happens in the books over the next couple episodes.
Alrighty. Well, I don't have anything else from Art and Soul for this one. So I think we're just going to go ahead and move on and wrap this episode up. that'll do it for today, but the Dune Minute is available on bluesky at duneminute.com, and you can email duneminute@gmail.com as well if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will be back with another episode tomorrow, and we'll see you then.
See ya.